Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Oh, hello. Welcome to another Rahulastar Pod with me, Rich Herring, and my guest, Tape Face. But which Tape Face will it be? Who knows? We don't know who it is. He's a lovely fella. This was recorded at the Richmond Theatre, which is a lovely place to be. And if you like these podcasts, please come and see us on tour. We're still doing some throughout 2020. We're in Birmingham, I think, March the 28th. Selling very fast. No guests for any of these yet announced or indeed booked. But that one sold out in double quick time last year, and it's a big venue. It'll be lovely if it could sell out again. It looks like it's going to. We're in Norwich in April. One of those shows has sold out. The other one has very few tickets left as I speak. So please head to richchang.com/gigs very quickly if you want to come to see one of those shows. You can also see me at the Leicester Square Theatre where I belong throughout March and April. I'm aiming very high with the guests. I'm hoping to have some doozies for you. It's worth booking ahead because when those names are announced, they will sell out very quickly and they're all going to be good. I just promise you that. So, look, come on, enough waffling around. Let's just have a look at this podcast and a listen to this podcast, depending on which medium we are using to ingest it. It's Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, now known as Rahulastar Pod, with Tape Face. It's Tape Face. All right, bye. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the beautiful Richmond Theatre. Please welcome a man who, despite what rumours you may have heard, is not having an ice cream party. It's Richard Herring! Hey, you guys up there, right up there at the top. Hey, yeah. Hey, lovely to be in Richmond. Hello. Oh, how fantastic to be here in beautiful Richmond. Welcome to Richard Herring's Labrador Speciesism Tribunal podcast. It's got to find a new direction with podcasts because, you know, there's so many out there, you have to find your own angle. What it is finding people who've been specious to Labradors and putting them up against judges, basically, to see if they should be sent to prison. Every week we'll get a different celebrity guest in to find when they've been prejudiced against Labradors. And then we'll find out what they've done and then mete out their punishments. But I haven't found out in advance if any of the guests have been prejudiced against Labradors. So it might be quite a short show. But I was hanging out on Richmond Park the other day, and a baby that had just been delivered by Brian Blessed just spitting out his umbilical cord. That baby calls it Rahulastar Pod. I don't know if that's going to
don't know if that's going to catch on. Richmond's a lovely place. We may talk about it more when we're back here. We're coming back next week, actually, so do come along if you're around next week. But I just want to explain the ice cream party reference. I was going to the supermarket. Now, I've had some problems at supermarkets before. If you followed my career, you all know. And I weren't buying very many things. I just had to buy a few groceries, but I bought quite a lot of ice cream, okay? And as we got to the checkout, I was there with my two kids, and the woman at the checkout said, "Ooh, are you having an ice cream party?" And I thought that was a bit rude. I've been picked up before my... I've been shamed before about my for my lactose tolerance, if you've seen my yogurt show. And I have to say, okay, it wasn't that much ice cream, okay? What I bought was two tubs of Haagen-Dazs ice cream, one tub of that low-calorie salted caramel stuff. You get 340 calories a tub now, which is great, but the problem is I just eat the whole tub, so I might as well have bought the Haagen-Dazs. Eight yogurt ice lollies. They're not even made of ice cream. Eight Soleros, which I live on, that's my diet. I live on one of those a day. 24 Tangle Twisters. You get 12 of those in a pack. There's just two packs of Tangle Twisters. Eight fruit pastel lollies. That's two packs of fruit pastel. There's not that many ice creams and lollies, I don't think. I was just stocking. I said, no, we're just stocking up. The kids eat a lolly a day each, and I eat a Solero a day each. That's like 48 lollies, and I'd say 3 tubs, like 12 to 16. That's no kind of ice cream party. If I was having an ice cream party, I'd get 30 or 40 people around. I think if they said, oh, we get what? We get 1.5 lollies each. So they've got this, what kind of ice cream party is this? That I get a selection, the two Haagen-Dazs with the same ice cream. It's not an ice cream party, is it? But got quite angry with the woman. I thought it's better than someone likes yogurt, isn't it? Which was the thing that got my anger last time this happened to me. Because it's sort of more, it seems more friendly, but it's much more sarcastic, isn't it? Oh, you're having an ice cream party, are you? You fucking greedy. We ate three of the Soleros the minute we got home, so you know, there's only three Soleros left. That wasn't just me, that was me and my two kids. They shouldn't eat those left for me. I know what they're doing. Anyway, right, we're going to crack on. About Richmond next week. So, a lot to say. I'll tell you this about Richmond. I looked at the house prices. It's a very posh place. Basically, all they're concerned with here is making sure no travellers come and stay here for a second. That's basically their own. As long as no travellers are here, they're happy. I looked up some house prices. And I was surprised, £155,000. That's not bad, is it? You can get a houseboat for that, a two-bedroom houseboat. With mooring, that's concluding mooring, so that's not bad. That's all right. Anyway, my guest this week is probably best known for his appearance on the red carpet at the Lord of the Rings Return of the King premiere. That is it doesn't get much better than that. I'd be very surprised to hear he's done anything better than that in his life. Will you please welcome, I don't know if he's got the tape on his face or not. If he has, it's going to be quite a short interview, or just a very, very long interview. Will you please welcome, ladies and gentlemen, it's Tape Face! Oh, he's got a mouth. He's got a mouth. Welcome. Sit down there. Sit down.
Hello. Oh.
You can speak.
I can speak. Wow. I have a human mouth and everything. Ooh.
Fantastic. What do you remember about that? Must have been exciting, being on the red carpet at the Lord of the Rings.
It sounds really exciting, yeah. But I was actually booked as a shitty street performer to do gigs to entertain the people who had waited there for 12 hours.
Right.
So it wasn't as glamorous as all that.
Did you see any of the Hobbits?
Nope. Oh, everyone in New Zealand was in the film.
Yeah.
We were all there.
So that was in Christchurch, was it?
That was in Wellington. Where everyone got it. Yeah, it's all the same. Yeah, we're over there.
One of those places.
Everywhere in New Zealand is Hobbiton.
So, well, let's talk about those street performing days, because you did a lot before Tape Face came along.
I did have a bit of stuff going on before.
And you talked before.
I did talk a lot before. Yeah. People like it when I don't talk.
It's a good trick if you can get away with it. I'm going to try and get that no-talking thing going.
Well, you've got the stripes.
Yeah, I thought about that. I was worried about wearing this, and I thought, but then I saw you turned up in a T-shirt, so it's fine. You started young. You were trained as a clown when you were 13 years old. You actually stalked a clown when you were a child, what a turnaround that is. Everything's upside down in New Zealand.
Yeah. I was born in Dunedin and I got given a magic set as a kid. I think everyone gets a magic set at some point and you learn magic tricks or whatever. I got obsessed about learning magic tricks. And I stalked our local clown in our small town of Timaru in New Zealand. And I followed this guy around shopping malls and watching his shows over and over and over. And I found out where he lived. I went to his house and I kind of knocked on his door and I auditioned myself on his doorstep. And he called my parents immediately. So they made a deal that I could be in his show on the weekends and whatnot. And I got to hang out and learn to be a clown. Yeah,
did you learn all his? Were you spoiling his tricks as you sing? Say, I know how you do that one.
Yeah, you suck. I can see you're juggling. Oh no. He didn't really have a lot of tricks.
No,
he was not that. In hindsight, he was a good clown, but yeah, he was lovely. But he taught me how to juggle. So I gave up on magic and I moved into juggling, and I became very obsessed about juggling to the point that I actually dropped out of school to juggle more.
Right.
I had very, very understanding parents. I was also homeschooled, so I think it was a double blow for them. Man. You still have to see them. It's really awkward. Yeah. So I did this juggling all day long, and then I became a bit of a street performer. And then I found out that there was a circus school in New Zealand, so I sort of ran away and joined a circus school.
Right.
And so I studied circus, which you can do. And so I studied at Circle Arts in Christchurch, New Zealand for 2 years. I majored in juggling. I minored in acrobatics, trapeze, high wire clowning and mime.
Okay.
And that was my day for 2 years. And then when I finished my qualifications, I stayed on as a teacher. So I taught jugglers. I taught jugglers for other people in Blitz and Bobs and whatnot.
Could you major in custard pies? Was that a main secret?
People did do some weird things. Yeah, people would major. Like, I lived with this guy, Kentaro Koshishi. He was a Japanese student. He came over to New Zealand because he liked Charlie Chaplin. He had no experience whatsoever. And he had the best broken English, and we lived together for 2 years. But by the end of the class, end of the year, he could ride a unicycle on a rope juggling 5 balls.
Right.
Because he was just that focused and he wanted to learn it.
Yeah.
And I tried to tell him over and over that Chaplin never did that.
And not in New Zealand, definitely not in New Zealand.
Big language barrier. It was really hard. My accent and him, it didn't work.
And so you moved into that sort of stuff. It's the Jim Rowe stuff. Were you actually in the Jim Rowe circus?
No, I really love that style of the humour. The Jim Rowe, the Coney Island circus sideshow freak show stuff. Because when I just discovered circus, I discovered circus sideshow and freak show. And I still love the freak show acts. I love the bearded ladies, the sword swallowers, the grotesque and the oddities of it all. The people who do all the body modification stuff, I think is fascinating and it's really, really fun. I like where it's going. And so I started learning how to do those tricks of hammering 4-inch nails up my nose, putting balloons up my nose, cough them out my mouth, trying to hammer brass tacks into my eyes, that sort of thing. Just, it's great fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just another Tuesday. Well, yeah, also it's a weird walking on broken glass. I used to do one routine where I would put my face into a pile of broken glass, and I had a friend who was a dwarf. He would stand on the back of my head and recite poems. It was great.
What I love about that is every time I go to see stuff like that, I just think, this is such a weird way to make a living. If you go back 10,000 years to the people living on the plains and scraping to make a living on the Serengeti or whatever.
Yeah, there would have been one of them, though, going, look at this, I got a cactus, I'm going to put it on my butt. Everyone else would be laughing. Yeah.
There was a guy I saw who did a thing you do as well, which was to put himself through a tennis racket. Which you got to go, it's such a crazy idea.
It is.
I'm going to see a tennis racket without any strings in it, I think it was.
Oh, now we're getting next level. It's good.
It comes out of some mint. You can only do it once, but it's brilliant. And you sort of think, how weird to have trained up to do that.
Yeah.
Although I saw you talking about the tennis racket thing, and you just had a big tennis racket.
Shut up! Don't ruin it.
That's what you said online. Don't ruin it. It's online.
It is. The trick for me, I have a very flexible shoulder. I can kind of. I'm hypermobile in one part of my shoulder. I don't dislocate my shoulder, but people do really do it properly. You can buy a pretty big tennis racket. Okay? The trick is to keep it moving all the time, and if you've got one body part in it, it already looks full. It's great.
Yeah. Could you still get through that if you could?
Hell no. Have you seen this? Fat clown.
And do you still do that sort of stuff as well? You do
I used to try and do a street festival once a year just to kind of break away. The last street festival I did was in Landshut in Germany, and I'd been doing Tape Face for 5 or 6 years. So it was really fun to go to Germany, and nobody knew and had seen Tape Face at all. So I had 10 days of just yelling at Germans going, I'm going to put my body through a tennis racket. They didn't understand me either. It was good.
But it's a crazy circuit. When I was doing the Edinburgh Fringe podcast Phil Nickel recommended a guy called Rumpel, who you probably must have come across.
Oh, yeah, Rumpel's fantastic. Yeah. He's mad as a hatter.
He certainly is. I had to interview him twice, I think, and it was quite a challenge. It's worth searching those out if you haven't.
Yeah, he does, like, endurance street shows. Like, he does, like, a 27-hour street show or something like that. He's mad.
Yeah.
But brilliantly mad.
But there must be a lot. I mean, there's a lot of mad comedians, but there must be more. The ratio of mad people must be more within that, especially
in the street performer, I think, community, yeah, maybe so. I always consider street performers, like, street performing in general, I consider the bungee jumping of comedy.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you have to really jump in and go for it. And also the street performers I still consider to be the last of the living pirates to a degree, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
The downside is that as we're moving forwards into a cashless society, it is making the busking and street performing a lot harder. So street performers are having to evolve into, you know, having tap cards and fringe tip and that sort of thing and working it out. It gets, you know, and then the moment you're tracking it, then you got to pay tax. That sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. You won quite a lot of comedy. You were doing stand-up comedy as well as the street performance.
Oh yeah, I sort of double-gunned everything for a while. Yeah, I was sort of doing a bit of street performing and then doing stand-up comedy back in New Zealand.
You're still very young at this stage. You're in your early 20s when you
early 20s doing in New Zealand as well. And because I moved from doing street performing, I moved indoors to do comedy. Jared Christmas actually got me into comedy.
Oh, did he?
Because one of his comedians bailed on a gig last minute, and he rung me up and he was like, "Can you come down and do some weird stuff?" And I was like, "Yeah, can I juggle fire?" And he was like, "No, you can't juggle fire." And so, all right, fine, I'll come down. I did all this weird stuff and I realized it's a lot easier to entertain a people who have come and paid to come into a venue rather than trying to stop people on their lunch breaks.
Yeah. And when there's a roof to keep the rain out.
Yeah, it stops the rain and the attitude. It's nice.
And so, well, the boy with tape on his face as it was originally.
Yes, 2005.
Yeah. Did this really come about? You had just tried to do a
silent character,
and you couldn't stop talking.
I talk a lot at the best of times, and so the first version of Tape Face didn't have tape. The boy with Tape Face didn't have tape. I think I tried to call it some weird French name that I didn't really understand, because all I was doing was I won this comedy award in 2005 called the Billy T. James Award for a show called Dance Monkey Dance, which was my life story doing all these weird carny tricks and whatnot. And everyone expected me after doing that show and winning that award to just keep doing shows like that.
Yeah.
And I hate it when people expect me to do things. The moment somebody expects me to do something, I'll try and do anything to not do what you expect. So I started telling people, I'm going to do a silent character. And everyone was like, you can't shut up for a minute. Good luck. So the first version didn't have tape, and I wandered out, and I lasted. I tried to do the music was playing and everything, and I just didn't know what I was doing. And somebody in the front row did something, and I just went, that's pretty funny. And then I'd ruined the act kind of thing. Yeah. So I came back the next night, and there was another comedian at the comedy club in New Zealand who said to me, the only way you can do a silent character is if you gaffer tape your mouth shut. Yeah. And that was kind of where it came about. It was more necessity than character driven.
Do you, I mean, that is, so it's that guy's idea, basically. It's
yeah,
the
you
other
notice
guy's...
that I didn't say his name.
I know, I know.
He's not getting credited for this. Fuck him.
Does he remember?
No, and I'm not reminding him either. Jesus. Are you mad? I'm a street performer at heart. Remember that. I ain't paying tax on that.
I mean, it's having the idea and then deciding to do the idea. It's a very different thing.
Very different. Very, very different area. No, he's pretty cool with it. He's pretty fun with it.
It's a genius idea. I mean, and I don't think you expected it to evolve into what it's become.
It was originally a 5-minute joke to prove a point that I could shut up.
Yeah.
And now
but
it's this.
By through that, I mean, there's so many repercussions to it. Obviously, one is you're not speaking, so you can literally go anywhere in the world.
Yeah, we do. It's mad. We go to all sorts of countries. We go. Yeah, we mean to China, to Singapore. Even Australians understand us. It's good. New Zealand.
So I mean, it's genius, but we were slightly talking backstage about the amount of travel. You know, I find it difficult just touring around the UK, and I'm quite glad that that's where the limits of my anyone interested in me. Hello to my 5 fans in Denmark, but you know that's a hectic schedule for you. You know, you're world famous, and that means you have to go everywhere.
We do go everywhere. It's kind of fun though. I still like traveling. It's beginning to now take its toll on me. Like I've sort of I'm. The thing I hate the most about traveling is other people who don't know how to travel. So when I was in New Zealand, I was a very late traveller as well. I didn't travel until I was about 28. I did not leave the country.
Right.
So it was pretty late. And the only way, the way I prepared for travel was I watched all of those travel shows of Border Patrol and that sort of thing. So I watched hundreds of hours, hundreds and hundreds. I know every situation, every possible outcome, because I'm a freaked out, paranoid traveller. So I know how to travel.
Yeah.
People who stand there waiting for the X-ray machine who can't get their laptop out, I want to hit with a stick with a nail. Just like, learn to travel, motherfuckers, learn to travel. Sorry, it annoys me. Yeah,
that's fine.
It's like it could be faster. Just that's the only part I don't like.
But you know, as a prop comedian, it's become like a big. It's a lot of props.
It is a lot of props, and I was saying to my friends earlier, I've started collecting the little bits of paper from the American Security Border Patrol where they go, "We have inspected your bag," because when it goes through an X-ray machine, it looks really funny. There's a toilet seat, horses' heads, there's a plunger, there's all sorts of weird things. I once had a woman at security did say to me, "Do you have anything in your suitcase?" And I couldn't help myself, and I said, "Yes, I have two horses' heads and a toilet seat." And she was just like, "Go away." Like, oh, you didn't see that on Border Patrol.
Do you not think of just having a lockup in every country with all the stuff in it and multiple copies, or does it need to be the same one?
I do have lockups in multiple countries. I still do it. I still have some props that I can't find anywhere else.
Right.
That's the problem when I write jokes. So if I write a bit of material, I can buy a prop and then I'll shove it into a storage facility and I'll leave it there for a while and then I'll find the joke and then I madly try and find the shop again to buy that prop or find it online. So it's like the original oven gloves that I used, like I bought the entire shop of those, but that was four pairs of oven gloves.
Right.
So that's my lot. And like, I've got a toy lion that I can tip up and it stands up on its head. And so I'm the weird guy alone in a toy shop surrounded by families trying to balance lions on their heads looking creepy and weird.
So does it come that way round? You're just looking at things and trying to work out their alternative?
I've got a feeling, my outlook is on imagination is that your imagination is like a muscle that you should exercise every single day. And a lot of people and adults grow up and forget to use it. So for me, I will continually find ways and games to play playing.
Well,
so.
It's a sort of childlike ability, which you get, it's sort of within my emergency questions. I find adults can't really come up with them very often. I mean, I for some reason can, but kids can sort of come up with them.
Yeah, kids instantly, because kids don't have that filter where you're told, do this, do this, do that.
Yeah,
you can just go, well, this is how it is.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously we'll whisk through a little bit, but the Boy with Tape Face, you did very well in Edinburgh, Melbourne and Edinburgh.
Yes.
You won the panel prize in Edinburgh.
Yes.
And so, the life-changing decision was to go on America's Got Talent.
Yeah, that was the big one.
Yeah, which is a difficult. I mean, I would say, in hindsight, do you think it was a good idea? Yeah.
Yeah.
it was quite a good idea. But for some people, it would be a terrible
idea.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's a big risk. You must have thought very hard about
I'm a very calculated performer when it comes to planning and structure. Like, for Edinburgh Fringe, I spent 3 years developing the plan to go there for 2010.
Right.
And then I worked my 9-year plan to try and win. I was trying to win the Perrier Award that year, and I wasn't allowed to. So I had to win the panel prize. So I was really bummed about that. So I sort of planned out all of my what's bits and pieces. So with America's Got Talent, I planned out the logistics of what would be every possible scenario and outcome. So that way I knew how I could play it best.
Yeah.
It's just a big game to me. I'm a big game fan. I love any sort of board games, Monopoly games, and also online games and things like that. So everything's a game. So it's like, how can I win?
Yeah.
I find that fun.
That is fun. Well, I know that exactly that. You are very well planned. But with something like America's Got Talent, if you watch that first performance on it, and you're obviously, you're backstage not talking to anyone and behaving weirdly, and then you come on stage and you're behaving quite weirdly.
Yeah.
I mean, compared
to
most
people. Originally, like backstage, everyone gets assigned a producer to sort of hang out and look after you and everything. And I remember going, right before going on stage, the producer was like, okay, so the judges know nothing about you. And I was like, right, boom, stop. We had to stop filming. Because I had two rules on the show was that I would never, ever speak on the show no matter what happened.
Yeah.
And they couldn't film me without tape on my face ever. That was
right.
The agreements for me being on the show. So the moment that they told me that the judges didn't know anything about me, I took the tape off, we stopped filming, and I said, before I go on stage, they have to know two things. One was that I was lucky enough to be invited to do the Royal Variety Performance in 2011. So for me, that validated me as a performer. So it's like, he must be good if he's done that. Oh, dad's home.
They're very surprised here. It's just, my goodness.
Mickey D gag there. So that validated me as a performer to be 2000 doing the Royal Variety.
Yeah.
And then the second thing I told them that they had to know was that I'm not as mental as I look. So there was that.
But the audience don't know, and so with that show, they do all the. They have some people mic'd up.
Yeah,
the
they've mic'd all over the place and whatnot.
What's this guy? He looks crazy. I don't like it. I'm scared, and it is quite scary.
Yeah,
but then it's the sort of audacity, and the, I mean, it's the. Obviously, there has to be a huge amount of confidence in this character.
Yeah,
for it to work.
Well, the joy of the character was that I didn't care.
Yeah,
there was no. I never wanted to win. They would always say, "So why do you want to win?" And I would always do that. I'd say three, and. Yeah, exactly. So the TV show was confused about that at the best of times, and okay. I never knew why I was there. And every time they would say, like, they did this stock standard filming of going, can you pace around backstage looking nervous? And I'd like, no, I can walk around and look at a wall if you want, but it would be mostly me just being an idiot. And that was it. So it was kind of fun in that sense when other contestants were on stage and everyone was told to kind of look forwards and not move. I got to kind of stand there and just exist. Yeah. It was just kind of fun and get distracted.
You know, it's a really interesting and you know, it grips you, and that audience are gripped what's going on. And then the time you take to get, I mean, it's the other gloves, which probably everyone knows now, but... I'm guessing it's one of those jokes that people still want to see.
Oh, that's my stairway to heaven. Yeah. There is no getting away from that. That's
which, again, is unusual for comedy. Most people have seen the joke. Oh, wait, we've seen
the
it.
Gloves. Yeah.
But it's, you know, so to...
Do you imagine that? Shut up and do the gloves.
He's going to do the gloves. He's waiting till the end to do the gloves. That's going to be... Have you got them here? It's a beautiful piece, and then you know, and then you do the lady in red dance.
Thing, yeah.
Yeah, so you've got them, but it's sort of so audacious because you might not have. I mean, I guess you know you've done it so many times, you know you have got, you will get them. But.
I also, like, when I talked with the producers as well, like, you don't get paid, no one gets paid to go on America's Got Talent. They cover your travel, so I got to go there, which was, I got to fly to America. But I kind of knew that if they were going to spend the money to fly me to America, they wouldn't have just put me on to buzz me off.
Because
it's like, and I did say that to them, because I was about to start a UK tour right before doing the audition, and my biggest concern was that they were going to make me look completely ridiculous, and then my tour would really suffer in this country, so that would be the worst thing possible. And I was trying to explain that to them over and over and over and over, and they came back and said to me that if they wanted somebody crazy, they would just grab someone off the street. They have more than enough to choose from in America.
Yeah.
And so getting me there, I kind of knew that, okay, they do want the act to be there. I didn't know how long I was going to make it, so that first audition was pretty much, the moment that audition went out, it went viral, I could have gone home after that. We had pretty much achieved the goal at that point.
Fair enough.
It's that dreaded word, exposure, and for me it was like, that's all we wanted, just that exposure.
Well, you certainly got that. You obviously progressed to the final. There's a great clip with you and Scary Spice.
Yes.
You get scary because you have a lot of audience participation in the act anyway.
See, it wasn't meant to be her.
Really?
That was meant to be Simon. Okay. Yeah. So I planned out everything. I wanted the finale of the show. If I made it to the finals, Simon Cowell in a toilet seat. That's good viewing. And I wanted to do that. The day before filming, he made this kind of announcement that he would not be chosen as a volunteer for anyone. Okay. No one was allowed to choose him. That was it. I was not allowed to choose him. So I had to choose Mel B. So Mel B, she knew that I was going to choose her for a routine, but she did not know what the routine was going to be. She was genuinely angry. I put a toilet seat on a Spice Girl. Apparently, you're not allowed to do that. If you watch the footage back, she takes off the toilet seat. She threw it on the ground. She broke my toilet seat that night. I'm an idiot. I took a photo of it. I plastered it all over my social media, and I invoiced her for $1,000. Because it was now a collector's edition toilet seat. She did not pay me, but I got a lot of likes.
It's good, isn't it? Spice Girl broke your toilet seat. That is, could be a very different story.
You don't get to say that very often.
You don't. It could be a very different story. But when you do that with... you know, you're doing that at clubs, and I know you get a very mixed audience. You get, you know, you get families. You get, I'm sure you get lots of stag nights.
Yeah, we're all
sorts of weird. Everyone kind of likes it.
Yeah,
it's not
it works.
Got a sort of dedicated audience. So what? And you get people up, and then you can't talk to them. And you see, I've seen you having to wait for them for the penny to drop.
Yeah,
about what they're meant to do.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
Yeah,
just wait.
Well, it is good. You do wait, and they do get it. But do they sometimes not get what they have to be drunk?
No, most people get it because the task I set for an audience member is normally pretty simple. Because the thing is, I'm not trying to set people up to fail. I want to celebrate people being on stage. It's like, there's so many, there's such a bad rep around audience participation. Like the idea, if I was to suddenly go, oh, I'm going to need a volunteer, all of you are going to freak out because you, none of you want to be up here with something that I'm going to do. But for me, I want to get you up on stage, give you a very easy, easy task that you will succeed. I present you and you leave the stage to the biggest round of applause and you are the hero of the show. Yeah. So for me, that's what it's all about. So I want people to have a very easy job to get it right and win.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's...
Yeah, well, it is a friendly
they normally
thing.
Pretty win. It's pretty easy, yeah. Put the toilet seat on your head. Yeah, that was all you needed to do. Yeah. Now I'm going to throw a plunger at you. Very straightforward, very straightforward.
And do you get heckled? Is it a knack that gets heckled?
I find that the people who heckle, like, not really.
No.
To heckle Tape Face is the equivalent of kicking a puppy.
Yeah.
There's no benefit in it for anyone. Nobody wins. And I also find that the audience tend to police themselves pretty well.
Yeah.
So it's like the people are there to see and they understand that, you know, I'm not going to reply.
Yeah.
And then that's
shut up, you pricky, can't talk.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Occasionally I deal with drunk men on stage. They're the worst. And then they're normally like the late night. Like Late and Live in Edinburgh was always really fun. At 3 a.m, a drunk Scottish guy on stage where you're trying to get him to do one thing or the other. And my secret to that is I can only really do it in this country because I'd probably get sued in America. I pinch them. I pinch them really hard under the arm, just there. And it sobers them up real quick. You just move them from one side of the stage and you go, dink, like that. And then you go, oh, fuck, that hurt. And it's like, yeah, do the bit, get off. And that's it. That's great. So, yeah.
Wow, that's going to be 2030's Me Too, isn't it? That's a lot of men coming in. He pinched me too. I couldn't say anything.
Some people get a tattoo on the bruise saying, I was pinched by Tape Face.
So, well, the America's Got Talent, obviously, you got to the final. You did pretty well in the final. But probably better not to win.
Didn't want to win, and I was ready to throw it right at the very end.
Really?
Yeah. I wanted to make the top five. That was my own personal goal. And the only reason for that was I took a promo photo before going into America's Got Talent, and it was a really cool headshot of Tape Face wearing big sunglasses, and it looked really badass. I really liked it. And so every time that the voting off was happening, I went on stage with those sunglasses in my bag, so I knew that if they said, Tape Face, your time is over, I would put the sunglasses on, and I would walk off stage, and I would post that picture, and then I was going to go off social media for a month, as if I vanished. But I couldn't do that. But if I'd made the top five, Nick Cannon would have come over to me, and he would have talked to me and said, how was your time on America's Got Talent? And for that final show, I had my own microphone in the bag.
Right.
All I wanted to do was do one mic drop and walk out.
Right.
That's it. I never got the chance to do that. Yeah. But then the other thing that I got to do, though, was I never got a golden buzzer. Everybody wants the golden buzzer on America's Got Talent. So I never got one of those when I was on my series, but I was lucky enough to be asked to do the America's Got Talent Champions show. So what I did was I structured my entire routine where I got Terry Crews, the host of that show, to come on stage and do the stripping routine, and I gave him a golden buzzer. So what that meant was, yay, I got to give him the golden buzzer. The number of people who now think I got a golden buzzer because all of the visuals were there, the Tape Face was there, the golden buzzer was there, and people just rewrite their own sort of histories.
Yeah.
The number of people who think I won America's Got Talent is ridiculous. The number of people who think I won X Factor is hilarious.
But I mean, you sort of have won America's Got Talent. I mean, did you have any profile in America at all before you did?
Not at all. Which it was one of the reasons why I went on the show. So I actually went to Las Vegas about 5 years or 5.5, 6 years ago to actually think about bringing my show there. I was in talks with producers already about bringing my show over to Vegas. And it was then I realized that we didn't have any profile. Nobody knew who we were. So going on America's Got Talent was the profile boost exposure that gave us the stronger negotiations to bring the show into Vegas.
Yeah. And now you've got is it a 3-year residency?
Yes, 3-year residency at Harrah's, and they built me a venue called the House of Tape, so I've got my own theatre.
Right.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So it's all covered, it's about $3,000 worth of gaffer tape holding everything together and all sorts of weird stuff. And so, yeah, we designed the space based around my show, and so, yeah, so we run shows there 6 nights a week.
Las Vegas is a weird town.
Yes, it is.
I've been there. I mean, I quite like gambling. That's why I probably wouldn't want to get a residency there.
You don't. Yeah, it's to live there is a strange thing.
Yeah.
I got stuck there for a week. British Airways, their website went down, so I got trapped there. So there were no planes coming in, no planes going out. So I got kind of stuck in Vegas for a week, and I got to hang out and just watch the city work. And genuinely, if you view it like Grand Theft Auto, it makes perfect sense. There's still mafia, there's still missions, and it's a game, and I just want to win. It's cool. I'm going to get a taxi license. Could you imagine if Tapeface picked you up in a cab?
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And so obviously there's a lot of big stars there in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Do you hang out with Celine Dion after the show?
Oh, yeah, we go down to the local McDonald's and grab drinks. And yeah, not really. I think there's normality. I've met some people. Like, I got to meet Penn and Teller, which was really cool.
Yeah.
I've been to some really strange concerts. And, like, the cool thing about being a headline actor in Vegas is that you get invited to go see other people's shows. Like, I got to go see Britney Spears live in concert.
Right.
You know, I'm a good mime. She's better. she spoke twice, man. It was ridiculous. It was great. And then, you know, I got to see some other fun concerts and that sort of thing, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so there's a bit of controversy. Can we talk about the controversy over the show? In that you have another tape face.
Yeah, man.
Who does the same act. And so some people didn't know that was coming and were upset.
No.
It wasn't the real you doing it.
People got frustrated. Again, this is one of the things that I've been planning this for about 15 years or whatever. This has always been a part of the plan, is to grow the show to the point that I want to have multiple versions of the show. One of the blueprints that I follow for all of my career has been Blue Man Group. Because I like their international style. I like the way that they branched out into that thing. And so for me, being a silent character and a clown, it's a role that can be taught. And one of the reasons why I really jumped into it was because I started getting plagiarized left, right, and center.
Sure.
And so when I started seeing people ripping off the act, it was really frustrating, because it would be like, well, they're doing that wrong, they're doing that wrong, they're doing that wrong. And then, but the weird thing was, I was watching the audiences of these videos, and the audiences were still laughing at the jokes. But I thought, if I could get my hands on that guy and do it better, they would have a much better experience.
Yeah.
So I found a young improvising comedian from New York, and I worked with him for about a year and a half. It's been fairly intensive.
Yeah.
And he's literally, we've cloned the show. So it's to the point where it's an acting gig. It's like the role of Tapeface. It's not as improvised as everyone thinks. Like, I've written out the script for every single action on stage, of pick up the balloon with your right hand, place it under the volunteer's left arm, take 3 steps to the stool, move the stool to the back of the stage. It's really boring to read. It really, really is. But for me, it has to be about show consistency. Because if the audience are getting the exact same experience, then that's the best bit about it.
Yeah.
And then the other one is that Rob, as the actor, he's also an improviser as well. So he's allowed to improvise, and he's allowed to have his moments of play, but he's not allowed to deviate from the script.
Yeah.
He can always deviate. He can add on a gag, but then he has to come back to the script every time, so that way the audience are getting the same experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, how many would you like, ideally?
Well, if people were annoyed by Tapeface number two,
yeah,
then I'm going to use this as the perfect time to say that, well, I'm going back to Vegas to start training up Tapeface number three.
Okay.
So, yeah, so it's pretty exciting. By the end of the year, we're hoping to have, we'll have three Tapefaces on three different continents,
okay,
all running at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you could just sit at home
Yeah.
I don't think I'll sit at home. I'll just hang out, run around the world being tape face.
Do you reckon I could do the same thing? Do you think I can just get someone in a black and white jumper to do this?
Well,
it's not hard, is it?
I don't think there could ever be a time there could ever be two Richard Herrings, is there?
I could get Charlie Borman to do it, put a jumper on him. I reckon if you're given the emergency questions, you can't deviate from it. You can't. You've got to say ham hand or some crumon.
You play snooker with yourself.
I do.
What, what one's the real Richard?
I only
want to support the real Richard, okay?
But like my ones all stay together in the same way. I wouldn't farm myself out. I just split myself into more different people.
So have I.
Yeah.
Well, that's the other thing, is that I've not farmed myself out either, because I'm Sam Wills. I'm the human being who does the job of being tape face.
Yeah.
The vocal minority who yell at me online are the people who don't actually know anything about me in the slightest. Most of them think I'm French.
One of the complaints was that the other guy didn't have a tattoo on his inner wrist. You're going to go, that can't be the only thing you're worried about. He said, well, it was fine, but he didn't have a tattoo on his inner wrist.
He did a great show. He had a piece of string on his arm instead. It was disgusting. I'm appalled. Yeah. No, in reality, and we do call the people who, and if you are listening and you are one of the vocal minority, you are one of the vocal minority. Because when we've got the following of people that come to the show, it's like, the theatre in Vegas, it's a 180-seater venue. We're selling it out on a consistent basis, and people are giving T2 stand. We call them T2 as well, which is real cute. People are giving T2 standing ovations on a regular basis. So for me, I'm watching audiences having a really, really good time. And also, I kind of feel like in the current world climate, it's not a bad thing to be bringing a happy show to more people.
No.
So get fucked.
Let's ask you.
You'll notice that only half of them were clapping for that.
Are you the real one? Have I got the real one now, though? That's all. Are you the real one or are you the other one?
Sam's very busy at the moment.
Because you nearly had to drop out, and I was just... I know Lee, your manager, and I said, can't you send the other one?
Send the other one in.
He said, no, it won't work.
I can send anyone.
I'll ask you an emergency question. We'll go fairly old school. Ooh. Well, let's ask this. Let's ask a tape-face-based emergency question. Has tape-face ever attempted to suck his own cock? Because, that's a sad image. He manages to make it up.
Yes, but it all started with a big joke around a skipping rope.
Let's have a look. Right, this is for any of the tape faces. Can I ask this one? Have you ever seen a ghost?
No, but TV turned off once.
What?
Yeah. I remember I convinced myself it was a ghost when I was a kid. I was about 8 years old, and I remember having... Do you ever have one of those TVs that were built into the radio and it was a little cube and the little wire things? I don't know. I had that, and it had a little snooze touch things there. You touch the top of it and it would go to sleep. What I didn't realise was that as a child I must have knocked the snooze button. So I was watching this little TV and it just went shoomp, and I thought, ooh, a ghost has turned it off.
Yeah. Ghosts hate television.
Yeah.
They're just jealous because they didn't have it in those days.
So, no, I don't think I've seen a ghost. No.
That's terrible. Right, here's a new question I've been asking a lot. If you could have one piece of art or any artifact from any museum and you got to take it home from any museum in the world, so it can be a historical item or an object of art, and you're allowed to take it home and keep it from any museum, is there anything that you would like to own?
I would like to own the Everlasting Gobstopper from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Bravo, that guy. It's very rare. Only in Richmond, brother. He was a man. He's wearing an opera hat, that guy, as well.
I
and a monocle,
you.
Brother.
I got you, yeah. Oh, yeah, you got this. Thank you. He can see the original anytime.
Yeah, it's true. He can, yeah. I mean, gobstoppers, you could just buy a lot of gobstoppers.
No, but the original Willy Wonka Everlasting Gobstopper was like a little mine covered in different shapes and whatnot in this little dome. I've seen it. It has been sold. I saw it on the TV show Porn Stars and it got sold.
Okay.
So, weirdly enough, I do know that it is in a museum in Vegas, which has been another reason why I'm in Vegas, because my whole mission is just to steal the gobstopper. It's part of my GTA plan.
That's a film. That is a movie. Yeah. That's a heist. Ocean's 11. The gobstopper.
The gobstopper series.
Right, let's see what have I got out. What have I got here? What the hell does this say? Oh no, it's all right, it's okay. I've seen you get asked this a lot about the tape.
Yep.
But I mean, you can't get through very much tape, I would have thought. It's not that, not a huge amount of tape.
It's not a huge... I'd go through a bit.
Yeah.
In a tour, I'll go through about three rolls. Yeah.
But it's not that much, is it? It's a disappointingly small amount of tape. But it's not a very big bit of tape, is it? Do you have the same bit of tape for each show?
No, I use one certain measurement of tape because I have to have it... When you put the tape on, you have to move your head enough so your cheeks can still move and whatnot. You have to have a clear line underneath. I have to take my lip ring out.
Yeah.
And then when I put the tape on, you can't put the tape down fully over your mouth because then your lip will create this weird frown shape. So there's a certain way of putting the tape on where you have to seal the top of your lip and then just the sides of your mouth. It's very, very odd.
Is most of the training of the other tape faces just
mostly
telling
that.
To do that?
The first 9 months is tape. Then we move into makeup.
And there's no tape in the UK that's good enough for you, is that right? We don't make.
I use one
tape.
Brand called. Am I allowed a brand name?
Yeah, of course.
Nashua 357, made by Berry Plastics. So yeah. I used. Yeah, thank you guys. Hook it up. Yeah, let's have a shout out for Berry Plastics. Woo! They don't sponsor me, but I want them to.
Yeah, I can't believe they don't.
I was cheeky enough that when that audition went out, I emailed them. I emailed Berry Plastics and I found the name and I was like, hey, I'm this guy, I do this routine, what do you guys think? They sent me a box of 60 rolls for Christmas.
Oh, that's good.
It's really nice.
Well, I may say this is an inappropriate use of our tape.
please never contact us again.
Because I did the Hitler Moustache show and I would give people a little Hitler Moustache to wear after the show. I was so close to inventing tape face, if only I'd put it over. But I kind of, in the end, I got this sort of Velcro. I found the cheapest way to do it was just some Velcro. And cut it into strips. But for about 1 in 15 people, it left quite a bad scar underneath.
That's not good. I do, if I'm doing, like, the Edinburgh Fringe, when I'm doing shows on and off, I do rip, I end up ripping a bit of skin off my face, and you end up with a red square that looks kind of crazy and weird. The secret, and the worst place to rip skin off is the top lip, when you lose a bit of layer off the skin off the top lip. The secret to rebuilding the skin overnight, so you can keep performing, Elizabeth Arden 8-hour cream. It's amazing. I don't know. It's high-quality stuff. You ladies are holding a secret. It's good. It's good stuff.
Good. There's another potential sponsor.
All right.
They want to sponsor us, they can.
I just need a skipping rope and a blowjob, and I'm away.
So you did... You did a Facebook Live show in Edinburgh.
Yeah!
That my tour manager, James, saw. Must have been about. It sounded amazing.
It tanked. It was awesome. It didn't tank. It was possibly one of the most creative things I've done in years. I really liked it, and I really want to do it. If anyone watched it, it was really, really fun. The premise of the show was that no one's using Facebook Live in a fun way. I think people are just going, yeah, I'm live on Facebook. Hey! And that's it. So we did this show, which was tape Facebook Live, where we went live at the start of the show, literally me and a performer friend from New Zealand called Vinyl Burns, and we announced that we're going to be live in 45 minutes coming up. We'll see you soon. And then we would stop the show. I would take off the tape at that point, and I would talk to the audience, and we would rehearse the show with our special guests in front of it. And we had one camera that we could move around and do different shots. And so we essentially in 45 minutes, it was kind of like rehearsing the Muppet Show. And then we went live for 10 to 15 minutes at the end of the show. And the pressure, like, for me, my agent was really worried about this because I was going live on my Tape Face Facebook page. So that page has about, I don't know, 330,000 followers on there who could potentially watch us just fuck around. And we really did. We lost so many followers that month. Oh, man. But I consider that like cutting the wheat from the... It was great. Anyone who was just like, oh, this isn't like America's Got Talent. It's like, yeah, I know. It's awesome, isn't it? Yeah, it's real weird and real fun.
He said it was great. He enjoyed it being a part of it. Does this happen with comedians? You know, you go to a party or something and you meet someone and they try and give you jokes. People try and give you
not really
mimes?
No one mimes at me. Occasionally people send me, hey, why don't you do something to this song?
Right.
And it's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I'll try. That's about it. I can't really do a lot with that.
And is it usually a racist song? Because that's usually what I get when people
say, weird. Yeah.
I've got a great joke. There's this Pakistani. Yeah, I'm going to stop you there, mate. I don't really... Probably that's.
But it's got a KFC tune in it. Trust me. It's brilliant. Pop culture.
And presumably you can be fairly incognito when you're in real life.
Again, that was one of the fun arguments for people who were going, there can be only one tape face. It's the argument that I can sit next to you on a bus and you wouldn't know it's me.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I can very much hide out.
Because that's quite a nice thing to be as successful as you are.
Yeah.
And so I think that as a comedian, I think, well, there's, you know, you're getting super famous. There's some advantage to it. There's a lot of disadvantages to it. Yeah. Being rich and hanging out at celebrity parties. No. But I play
PlayStation in my house. That's all I do. Yeah.
But, you know, that's to be able to just take the stuff off and just walk out there and be a completely different guy.
Yeah. It's nice. The only reason I'm wearing this tonight is because I want to get a photo with you later on to put onto social media.
Okay. So,
otherwise, I would have just come down here in a jacket and a hoodie and just hung out, and it would have been really fun.
Yeah, it's good. I might not have recognized you. You might try to come in the back.
Yeah, everyone would just go, "Who's this guy? Why does he look like he's selling a big issue? Big green jacket."
And
anybody got a gobstopper?
It's interesting because mine was very uncool, I would say, before you.
I think you'll find it still is.
Yeah, well, is it? I mean, it's amazing to take, because there was a very specific idea about what mime was, or at least like the cliche of it was.
I do wear the stripy top as a nod to traditional mime, and that's it. But mime people, we also call it the M word, because it is you instantly have that connotation of somebody walking against the wind or stuck in a box and that sort of thing. It's horrible. I don't know. There are some really good mimes out there. I'm not one of them. I'm a fairly loud, I don't know, silent comedian.
But it's used as a sort of insulting thing as well as it's a mime artist.
Yeah, but then so is prop comic.
That's true.
I'll take it. Doesn't matter. Theory is that if the audience is laughing, I don't give a shit. Nothing.
Right.
If I had a skipping rope, these people would be in hysterics.
Right, I'm going to ask you another merch. I'm going to go late in the book because this is when I got tired. That's the wrong page to ask. These are Christmas lessons. Oh, it's coming out. Oh, it might be. It's probably past Christmas by the time we've done. This will go out.
Oh, then I'll have Take Face 5 up and running.
Overall, wouldn't you prefer it if your family just totted up how much Christmas cost and then divided that sum of money equally between you all?
We cancelled Christmas in our house.
Did you?
Yeah, it was a genuine decision. One person clapping. it was just because we just all grew out of it to a degree.
Right.
It just got a bit silly for us to be buying gifts for each other that no one really wanted.
Yeah.
And then we tried to limit it to a just spend $50 kind of thing. And then it just turned into this thing of going, why don't we just enjoy each other's company and have a really nice meal together? And that became more about the spirit of Christmas.
And buy yourself a present.
Buy yourself a present. It's nice.
It's amazing how much, you know, when we're looking at a world of like trying to cut down on waste, how much stuff goes around Christmas.
I grew up with a New Zealand Christmas, so it's summer, so you have a barbecue and you go to the beach. Yeah. Uh-huh. So I only discovered Christmas in this country in, 2007, and that's when, the meal makes sense. Okay. The number of people in New Zealand who try and cook a full Christmas dinner in 29 degrees, 32 degrees, and you're sweating trying to cut a turkey or some shit. It's fast.
I mean, a lot of people must die. You feel like that just in the UK, it's freezing cold. Oh, my God.
I've sweated out Christmas.
All right, let's get to have Christmas. And that's a very long question. Who is the best Benny?
Benny?
Yeah, who's the best Benny?
Best Benny. Isn't it Benny and Frankie?
Benny and Frankie? Frankie
and Benny?
Yeah,
the restaurant chain.
Yeah. Is he the best?
Oh, he does better than Frankie. He got named first.
He did, Frankie and Benny.
Oh, no, it is.
Frankie and Benny. he did worse.
But it's not Frankie and Frankie.
It isn't.
And it's not Benny and Benny. So no. Of Frankie and Benny, he's the best Benny.
Okay. I like Benny from Top Cat.
Ooh.
Remember Benny from Top
Cat? I do remember Benny from Top Cat.
He might be too young, but I thought it's the Top Cat.
Top Cat, he was a hustler. He was.
Did they call it Top Cat in New Zealand or Boss Cat?
No, they called it Cat Cat. Of course they called it Top Cat.
It's called Boss Cat in America.
Why?
Because that's his name, but then they couldn't call it that in the UK because there was a brand of cat food called Boss Cat. So they had to call it Top Cat. Is that right, or am I mentally ill?
Yeah, I'm Top right. Cat's the right name for it.
Top Cat is the UK name for it.
So they
sent it to Britain, and then they sent the British one to New Zealand.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, good.
Benny, Top Cat, fine.
Top Cat.
But Frankie and Benny, other Benny. Maybe Benny the cat moved in with Frankie.
Yeah.
And they set up.
What does it come from, Frankie and Ben? Who was it, Frankie and do we're lovers? Who's that? Who's that, Frankie and Johnny? Do you think they've written that? Is that what they're trying to do? Are they trying to make us think of that? It's the worst restaurant chain in the world, Frankie and Benny. If you're listening, either of you, I don't want you to sponsor my podcast. It'd be great if that accidentally get now, because just adverts come in sometimes. I did...
Benny and the Jets.
Benny and the Jets, that's a good... That's
I'm
a good,
late,
good
though,
choice.
Now.
I did, it's too late. I'm on to something else. I did it. I did, like, I had a podcast. They had a podcast for the Extinction Rebellion thing, and I put a podcast out. And I said, can we not have the ads come into that one? But the ads still came in, and there was an ad for... The ad that came in was for a car. So, yeah, be very comfortable. Yeah, buy this Ford SUV. Come on, the world's fucked anyway. So you have a limited amount of control, but it throws up things like. So Frankie and Benny's coming, which it might do. I was doing one about. There was one that I don't know if my producer Ben Walker, who I'm indebted to, did this on purpose. But I was talking to Mark Watson about advertising before I did adverts, where I was quite cynical about it, and so we're talking about the Bill Hicks stuff. And as I'm talking about the Bill Hicks stuff, that's an ad break in the middle of a sentence. So an ad comes on. I don't think it's on purpose, but maybe Bill Hicks... Maybe that's a ghost. Maybe that's a ghost.
Bill Hicks turned off my TV.
He did. He hates us for living. One more emergency questions at random. Are they all coming up in the wrong pieces? Right, OK. This is good because you've travelled a lot. Have you ever been on a plane that's been in an emergency and seen a genuine look of fear on the face of a flight attendant?
No.
Have you not?
No. I've got a good friend, David Young, who has, though, right. And he's afraid of flying, and I keep forgetting that he's afraid of flying. And then I've seen all the flying shows as well, so I keep mentioning all the accidents.
Yeah.
And I'm there the worst. Occasionally, he will tell me off very seriously.
So was he in something?
I think he had a situation that was he saw panic and terror.
Yeah.
And I forget that, and I make jokes.
Yeah, it's fair enough.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've had one, it's not going to happen again. That's the way I look at it. That's your... if you got through one...
Oh, I stood up too quick on a plane once and fell over.
Okay.
If there was a moment of panic and terror, I had it.
Was that when the plane had landed? And
no, I don't know. I think there was still a lot of altitude and a lot of red wine.
Okay.
Maybe a Valium. I don't know. I'm a very nervous flyer.
And so are you living out? Are you based anywhere, or are you living out of a suitcase?
I live basically? Between Heathrow Terminal 4 and LAX.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what I do. No, I live in Las Vegas now, pretty much. Even though the residency is there till 2021, we are hoping that we will extend the run. We've got we're the type of show that does hit the right demographic for Vegas, because it's suitable for families, it's suitable for international audiences and whatnot, so hopefully they will extend it.
Yeah.
So I think I'll consider Vegas home. And Vegas also, it is... They say it's the entertainment capital of the world. I'm not sure it's the quality entertainment capital of the world, but it is the entertainment capital of the world, because they do shows there. So many shows happen and so many audience members come through. So it's a bit like the show doesn't have to move. The audiences are the ones who are on tour.
Yeah.
Which makes it very difficult, because it's a whole new beast to try and sell to an audience that literally flushes every 3 days. So you've got new people coming in every 3 days to go, well, you've got to try and tell them again. Here's a show. There's no like Edinburgh, get a buzz, get a word of mouth thing going at all. No.
Do you have leafleters? Do people go out leafleting for you?
I actually introduced Street Team. Because everyone else was just doing these big cars driving around and whatnot. And I think that it's a very simple, straightforward form of advertising. So I got a couple of my friends and said, do you guys want to be Street Team? They had two crappy jobs. And they were like, yeah, we'll be doing this. And so... that we go on the streets and we just hand out flyers and talk to people.
Yeah.
And just, I think that's always a nicer way of doing it, actually telling people a bit about the show and then they come and see it.
Well, I've never really thought of that you're actually in a situation where, but like you say, not the audience is not there most of the time, and there's a lot of competition.
There's a lot of competition.
So you're up against these amazing shows.
Cirque du Soleil are just like the biggest shows. But then these other shows become like, Cirque du Soleil are like the McDonald's of entertainment over there. Like there's so many Cirque du Soleil shows, and there's so many, they're almost just become a bit of a cliche in themselves. And then the alternative shows to Cirque du Soleil have been, some really other cool, edgy ones, late night kind of comedy. But they're now almost tipping into the mainstream because they're making so many versions of themselves as well.
Yeah.
So now there's shows like, I don't know if Amy Misbehave, her Misbehave's Game Show.
Yeah.
So she's over in Vegas as well with her show. So her show and my show have become like the weird cult, quieter little ones that they're the alternatives. So it's like, go see Cirque du Soleil if you want to spend, $300 and watch somebody in spandex jump around to the tunes of Enya. I don't know. And then, or you can, it's pretty much it. Or you can come and see a really random, like to see a fringe festival style show in Vegas is a lot of fun when you also get to throw some of the Vegas production values into it as well. It's pretty good.
Cool. Now this is getting very specific, but this is just, I was sort of imagining you living like in a hotel room in Las Vegas, but do you have a house in Las Vegas?
I do have a house. They did want me to live in a hotel room initially, and they said, you can eat at the employee dining room every day. And I was like, no, I fucking won't. No, I lived just off the strip for the first year. I lived in an apartment block where I could walk to work. Yeah. And so living in the strip was really, really cool because I didn't drive, so I just got to walk around everywhere, which was kind of fun. But after a year of that, the novelty of Vegas does wear off. But in saying that, I've never seen any problems in Vegas. I've never seen a fight. I've never seen any issues. I've never seen anyone sort of having any problems or yelling or screaming. And like people just walk around drinking left, right, and center. Yeah. And I always think if that was here, man, it'd be carnage. It'd be like 28 days later with pina coladas everywhere.
But it's sort of, well, from my experience, I'm glad I went for, I think I stayed for about 3 days, which was
That's
insane.
Perfect.
But it's insane for me. I didn't go see any shows. I just gambled. And you're stuck in these airless, windowless, weird rooms.
They've all got their own smells as well.
Right.
Every casino does genuinely have their own scent.
Yeah.
So you can learn the smell of the Luxor, the smell of the Flamingo. And they've all got their own different styles of carpets as well. The carpets are all designed so you don't look at them. So they've got horrible patterns. So you don't want to look at them. So you keep your eye line up. So you're looking at the machines.
Yeah.
It's creepy, isn't it? Yeah. It's really,
you lose track of time. You lose
complete
track of time.
There's no nothing. They
try so everyone's sort of zombie. Everyone's sort of zombies in a different way than 28 years. It's just proper. Like zombies would be, fuck off, I'm not chasing you. I'm tired. But it's a strange place.
It is, yeah. But now I live just out in the suburbs. So when I go, I finish my show and I drive 25 minutes into normality, where it's like, as normal as a Walmart is, I suppose. But in the suburbs where there's just normal things, and I can see the strip in the distance, and just it's normal. It's nice. Okay.
Have you ever been accused by a shop assistant at a supermarket of buying too much of one product? Because it happens to me all the time.
I used to shop in a place called Red Rocket down in Southend, and the woman there, it was one of those shops that you only get in the UK, you can't find them anywhere else. One of the shops that sells everything. You know, the ones that they're like, here's a bit of food, here's some stuff, here's this thing, all the aisles. And she used to let me just walk up and down the aisles listening to music, because that's how I would workshop my ideas, listening to music, picking up props and playing with them. With the plunger throwing thing at Mel B.
Yeah.
Originally, I had a crossbow. I actually traded. This is a weird story. I traded a set of bouncy stilts for a guy's crossbow. He built a crossbow that could shoot a plunger. So we made a deal and we swapped. So he had my stilts and he bounced away, and I got this crossbow. So the crossbow could shoot a plunger, but I had to modify the plunger slightly. So I went to Red Rocket and I bought 3 plungers.
Yeah.
And I came home and I adjusted the plungers and I kept shooting them. The whole thing kept blowing up in my face like Wile E. Coyote. So I had to go back to the shop and buy another 4 plungers. Okay. So I got more plungers. In the course of a day, I bought about 15 plungers. She didn't say anything.
She's been trained. She's been trained to that.
She never questioned
that
me
guy
once.
Has done a massive shit.
Yeah, there's a lot.
He's trying to persist with the one system of getting
coming back with broken plungers going, this one broke. Got to get another one. Oh.
I also had an experience. It's happened to me a lot where I went. I actually was buying stuff for a party. So I bought it was a real party. I bought lots of booze and I bought like cleaning stuff. But I basically just had things came through, and the woman was one of those women going, are you having a party? I said, yeah, because of the booze. And then all the cleaning stuff she had, that's for cleaning up after the party. You go, yeah, that's right, yeah.
That's for getting rid of the body.
And then Chris came through, those are the snacks for the party. And then I bought a lot of toilet roll. Just and that came through, and then she didn't say anything. What do you think that's for? That stuff? Happens to me a lot.
You off out trick or treating?
Happens to me a lot. People, I don't think they should comment. That should be the first rule of being working at a supermarket.
What? Don't talk to them.
Don't
about
talk
what you
to people. Don't comment. You can don't talk to them about. You can't say what have you bought that for.
Yeah, true. Yeah. No,
I once bought some very lazy garlic, and the guy went, very lazy garlic, lazy. Fuck off, mate. You're selling it.
Was he sitting down at the register at the time? What a prick. What a prick. Stand up and insult me at least.
It's quite good just to have a shop where the guy stocks stuff and then takes the piss out of you for buying it. Yeah. You fucking cunt. We got proper garlic. I just thought I'd try this.
You're too good for real garlic now, huh? Got your podcast.
Right, well, I think we're nearly at an end. Unfortunately, let me just check. I haven't missed anything very important. No. I got it all in. Oh, what happened with your... You had a BBC show? Did you have a pilot. Yeah. What happened with that?
Dealing with the BBC.
Yeah, it's difficult.
It was a bit frustrating because I don't think, and in hindsight, I'll say it because quite frankly, fuck them. I never got to make the thing I wanted to make.
Right.
Yeah. So I remember at one point, no, it was fine. I'd love to do something else again. I've written out some more other bits and pieces. It was a good concept for a show. I wanted to write a show that was a series of sketches, a series of stand-up comedy, and also some animation and some other stuff as well, and music. I wanted to put a bit of a... Again, I always go back to the Muppet Show. I want to have something which is timeless. And things like Monty Python, you can still watch again and again and again, and it doesn't have a lot of references of time. So I wanted to create something like that. And, it just got pushed in a few different areas that I never really got it to sort of fly by on.
But, have you seen Spencer Jones's stuff?
I have.
His TV show is extraordinary.
But he's done it the right way because he's doing little short soundbite ones. It's 10-minute perfect surrealism and whatnot. Yeah. I think that's great.
Yeah. Oh, well, hopefully. Do you know what's coming next? Have you got plans for...
Put a few plans.
Yeah. Is there anything that you can tell us about?
T7?
You need more. You need to train up like a room of the guys. Well, not one at a time. You need to get like an audience like this. 200 people.
All right, everyone. get the tape and put it here. All right.
Take out your tongue piercer.
Oh, well.
And you're off after this. You're off to Europe and then back to Las Vegas.
Back to promo for doing a residency in Paris for 2 months for November, December, and then back to Vegas and then doing a tour in Holland and then some other touring.
Will you be coming back to the UK? Any plans to come back to the UK?
I'd like to. Yeah, we'll come back. Well, one of us will. You'll never know. Except the other one's 5'9". He's like,
if you need it, I reckon I could do it. It's just messing around in it with gloves and stuff.
Well, this is easy. Blah, 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 blah. Oh, record. Blah, 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 blah. Record. Oh, snooker, snooker, snooker. Blah, 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 blah.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Tate Face. Thank you very much. Go and have a drink. Go and have a drink. We'll be back next week. Change your clothes. You have been listening to Rahalastapah with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Tate Face. But which one was it? No one will ever know. That's a beautiful secret. Thank you very much to Pest for providing the music for this programme. Thank you also very much to everyone at the Richmond Theatre. We are made super welcome. Thank you very much to Chris Evans, not that one, and his team from Go Faster Stripe. And thank you to everyone at ACAS, as well as the British Comedy Guide. I owe you guys too much to be ever able to pay you back, but I hope a little mention in this credits will suffice. I'd like to thank my tour producer, James Hingley. I'd like to thank my series producer, Ben Walker. I'm indebted to my executive producer, Gregory Geggs Watt. And that's his name, it's not a question. He's a wonderful executive producer. He's the most handsome so far. I hope the others won't mind me saying that. But also, he's tender. He's a tender executive producer. Some of them are mean. You've seen the stories in the paper, and Gregory is a nice one. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying the others weren't nice too. They've all been nice so far, but watch out for the executive producers. What do they do? Who knows? This is a Fuzz Go Faster Stripe and a Sky Potato production. Hey, why not head down to yon gofasterstripe.com, buy some Trumps, become a Badger, take a look through my catalogue of stand-up shows. You can download them, you can buy them on DVD. There's some books in there as well. Everything for the discerning idiot who wants to spend some money on stuff. Thank you. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.